Hello world, I'm Kate Armstrong and this is Future Talks. Future Talks is a series of conversations with friends of FabLab Barcelona, exploring the nature of emergent futures from the past to the present and beyond. For this episode, we invited Indy Yoha. How do we create new narratives from local contexts? This is crucial in order to democratize our imaginations of what the future looks like. In this episode, Indy Yoha speaks with Tomás Díaz, discussing the role of interventions, design, and building legitimacy to create distributed networks that address large-scale or wicked problems. Indy visited Barcelona to give the students from the Master in Design for Emergent Futures a masterclass in his work and vision. Indy is an architect, founder of the critical practice Dark Matter Labs, and part of the Project 00 Design Collective. I hope you enjoy the show.
Indy, thank you for joining us at MDF. Of course, when we're recording, we have a motorbike passing by.
It's Barcelona.
It's a great icebreaker, yeah.
Yeah. No, delighted to be here, honestly, Thomas. Real pleasure to come here. So.
Thank you. So we're next to La Rambla, where we can see the manifestation of a current state of affairs, let's say. How society is facing, is kind of trapped in consumption, is trapped on some broken systems, and we believe sometimes these big problems seems like don't have any solution. No, they are kind of big wicked problems. So, what do you think? What is your work doing in terms to address these issues, and how do you think design can play a role to deal with this?
Yeah, no, I think it's a really important question. I think first thing I'd say is that. Wicked problems, historically we have had solutions to these things. The state and the mechanisms of the state haven't been always a kind of, in a way, only solving small problems. Historically, state has done extraordinary things. So we have to also believe in the power of extraordinary things. You know, whether it's the Marshall Plan or whether it's the NHS built in the UK, state has the capacity for extraordinary things. The real question is, how do we build the legitimacy for this capacity?
Yes.
How does the state rebuild legitimacy for addressing complex problems? That, I think, is a real philosophical question on one hand. And then I think, how do we build shared knowledge and comprehension of this issue? So how do we build consciousness, a civic consciousness of this future? So increasingly, data goes from data to policymakers to politicians. Actually, we need data to build informed citizenship before we can move forward. So the whole flow of how we understand the city and how we comprehend the city and the way we build consciousness, I think, has to be challenged. But the real fundamental question is, how do we build legitimacy for addressing large-scale problems? And also remembering in mind the big issue, which is there are many people with vested interests who don't want this to be constructed.
Yeah,
right.
Correct.
So there are counter sides to the story.
And how are designers, from a designer point of view, and someone that is starting to study design, how they can play a role in this transformation?
I think the first thing is to ask more simpler presumptions, ask simple questions about things. So one of the things that always struck me was even the idea of owning a piece of property, mm-hmm. right? The idea of owning a piece of land. What do you own? Do you own the physical geography? Do you own the relationship of how that land gives you monopolistic access to certain things? What is it you own? Mm-hmm. And I think what designers have a need to do, especially in this context, is actually start from much more fundamental first principles and to relink those possibilities, because actually increasingly design is not just about designing things, but it's designing these institutional infrastructures. I would suggest pretty clearly the future of property rights is going to be radically reimagined in the 21st mm-hmm. century. So these things that are boring, insignificant, and forgotten are actually going to be the centerpiece of finding solutions to the wicked problems that we have. Mm-hmm. And so keep an eye on the boring.
And what do you think about the idea of designing interventions? Because again, I think there is the boring changes very slow. And then I think at the same time, things are going very fast somehow.
Yeah.
And then we have, you know, when you met today our students, they are somehow impatient. And then sometimes they skip even some of those questions, no? But this idea of designing interventions, how it resonates to you?
I think interventions are really important. And I think the question is, what are the tools of intervention?
Okay.
So you can actually talk about, you can intervene in redesigning feedback, mm-hmm. right? So one of the kind of interesting theses is if you could reconnect feedback, you would actually drive self-regulation and governance in new ways. I think if you can make the invisible visible, you can create new politics around, if people could understand the level of pollution in the Ramblas right now, they would understand physically what that was doing to them. So actually, how can you create these interventions which create the politics for legitimacy, to create the infrastructure for it? This is never going to be one magic bullet, one design, one holy grail that'll solve everything. It's going to require all these things, and every one of these interventions has legitimacy, it's true.
So you were talking also previously today about this idea, like it seems like the future is shrinking somehow. If we look somehow at the type of future that we can see from the news and you know from the everyday life, things seems to be shrinking. So you were saying something really interesting about changing that kind of tendency and taking a different approach.
Yeah, I mean, we all face, we know as a civilization, we face existential threats, no doubt about it. But at the same time, it's worth remembering that actually on a larger scale of human civilization and even Earth civilization, not even human, and Earth ecosystems, actually the future is relatively infinite. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a freedom that allows that I think is important to remember. And I think what's even more important to remember, it's in the interest of many people in power, mm-hmm. to imagine the future as an increasingly shrinking story. Mm-hmm. So then the argument is largely about, you know, go hunt some unicorns, or it's I own this ground or you own this ground. It creates, basically, the future becomes contestable. Whereas actually, if you look at the kind of broader scheme of things, there is an infinite possibility for human civilization. And I think we have to actually decolonize the future. The future shouldn't be written from San Francisco alone. The future must not be written from actually Los Angeles alone. It needs to be reimagined in context. What is the future? Like we have Afro futures, what is the Spaniard futures? What are the radical imaginations of actually looking at those futures from an intrinsic location, which I think have to be embraced? And I think the role of science fiction is deeply underplayed. Like, what, name me a science fiction film from Barcelona, right? I think those are important questions. So people talk about technical solutions, but I also think we also need philosophical, cultural solutions.
And new narratives.
New discourses, and new ways of perceiving the future. And I think the more we can decolonize those futures, I think the more powerful it gets. And that's a democracy. How do we democratize people's imaginations of the future? That I think is foundational. So people, we can also talk about interventions on the ground, but equally as important is interventions in people's minds. Mm-hmm. And how do we democratize those?
I love what you said about the expanding the future or creating multiple futures, no? Even though that we have connected futures, meaning like we can have as many different futures as people there are in the planet, there is no way that we can see these futures disconnected from each other somehow, right?
But also, look at it structurally in a way. If you make people's lives precarious, i.e. they don't have the certainty of work, actually their ability to see the future becomes radically reduced.
Yeah.
Right? We know this, right? Poverty diminishes your ability to see long timescales. So you invest your money in, and this is not pejorative, you invest your money in going to the hairdresser or nail clippers. You go for everyday experiences rather than structural experiences. Mm-hmm. So we have constructed an economy of short-termness by design.
Yeah.
And that precariousness means that actually the future becomes the privilege of the few.
That's it.
That to discuss this, have this conversation, is a privilege of us.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
For many, it doesn't exist. And so how do we recreate, democratize that privilege, I think is important if we're going to build genuine democracies.
So I have two more questions.
Sure.
One is, what's the role of, again, the role of design? How we should somehow understand design or redefine design in this context. It cannot be the same Bauhaus-driven design. It cannot be design for aesthetics. It cannot be design services. I think it's more complex. Design seems to be relevant in some point. And then at the other hand, it tries to keep some kind of a status quo. What is the real role?
I try not to even talk about it.
Okay.
largely because I think it's one of those problems that's best preserved, best looked at in different ways. I think we teach a lot of people to be analytical.
Yeah.
Many, many studies and universities are actually building analytical capacities. I think what design teaches us is to build propositional capacity, mm-hmm. right? That is its unique contribution, is that it's not an analytical frame, it's not just an analytical, it's a propositional frame. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in a complex world, we know proposition and craft, this kind of systems craft, of how you propose, sense feedback, repropose, is a continuous loop. It's the, I would say the designer in a systems world is a 21st century systems craftsperson.
Yep.
And they have to operate in craft, which is a new sensibility of being, rather than the sensibility of what I would call analytics.
I see.
And I think that, to me, is the kind of new paradigm, if we wanted to talk about it.
Okay. But the last one is, what comes to your mind when I say design for emerging futures?
I think one of the best things about it is I think that bringing the future into discussion mm-hmm. is the first most powerful thing you've done there. Second, I think what for me it allows us to do is to look at this chronic catastrophe. If you look at the world over the next 10 to 12 years, we are looking at almost a structural chronic catastrophe that we're facing. And for designers to start to embrace this structural challenge and to challenge the models and ways of thinking of intervening and the interventions that are required at a systems craft level, design propositions required, I think that scale of thinking and that scale of proposition is going to be absolutely revolutionary. And remember, for me, it's not scale as in the whole world. Actually, decarbonizing your street is equally a scale of problem, because it involves legitimacy all the way through to building shared governance, shared all these infrastructures. So it's not about economies of scale, but necessarily economies of spread of these big innovations and how they sit there.
Again, thank you, Indy, always for being so enlightening.
And
I'm sure that we're going to see you again. Thank you, man.
Pleasure. Ciao.
Thank you for listening. The Future Talks podcast is produced by us at FabLab Barcelona with happiness. This episode was recorded at Elisava. Special thanks to MDEF team and Elisava School for Design and Engineering. Music by Nua, art by Leina Sofia.